Well, hello. I would say good morning, but because this is a podcast, who knows what time it is if you're listening. I'm so used to saying that I'm so used to saying good morning, welcome to Money Matters, that I realize now that as we move into the podcast world, this is on demand. So who knows what time it is as you're listening, but thank you for tuning in to the first ever edition of Money Matters Freeform. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here based in Atlanta, of course, with Ryan Ely, who joins us today.
Good morning.
Ryan Ely and I have been doing radio now for almost a decade. Well, actually, yeah, over a decade. Most of those years on WSB Radio, based out of Atlanta. It's News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And we're a live call-in show. Today, we're recording on a Sunday because of programmatically and because of breaking news and the tragedy that has happened in Orlando, the nightclub shooting, 50 dead, 53 injured, worst mass shooting in U.S. history. It's a sad day in America. And this is going to have implications from far-reaching, just like 9/11 did. And we're going to see this show up in politics. We'll see this show up in the election coming in November. And of course, as we know, we've been talking about for weeks, politics impacts money in Wall Street. So our prayers are with the families of this just horrific tragedy. I cannot imagine you walk into a nightclub and if you are fortunate enough to walk out, 50 of your compatriots are dead, 53 injured. And I can't even fathom how that could even happen physically. So I want to talk about this briefly. This is not our area of expertise, but I do want to talk about markets in general and, of course, the implications of this, but also the implications of what's happening in the world right now. We are in a historic period of time when it comes to interest rates. There, we have $10.5 trillion around the world that are trading at negative interest rates. We've got to talk about what that means. We need to talk about oil, as oil hit $50 this week. We'll talk about the markets, of course. There's a CFO study that talks about CFOs and politics in the United States and how they feel about how politics impacted the market. We'll talk about some of the woes the retail companies have had. And then, of course, we need to go into... We have some market almanac history that's very interesting as we approach the S&P 500 getting closer and closer to a new high. So an awful lot happening. Ryan Ely, this is fun. You've been doing this a very long time. You know what you're talking about. Ryan Ely's been an investment advisor now for many, many years. Ryan and I did our first radio show together back about 10 years ago, and we've been doing it ever since. So every Sunday morning, used to be Saturdays in the very beginning, then it moved to Sunday. It's been Sunday mornings for a very, very long time. So we're coming to you via podcast. Let's call this Money Matters Freeform. And you can find me and the Money Matters team. It's easy to do so. You go to wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Contact button in those emails come straight to Ryan and I and the Money Matters team, and we will get back to you. A couple of stories that are trending on WesMoss.com right now. One, how much you need to save to spend $100,000 in retirement. Number two, top four countries to retire in overseas. Number three, Washington meets Wall Street. And that goes back to talking about politics and the market. We call this, and we've been talking about our policy opportunities portfolio that has gotten a lot of attention. It's a strategy with 50 individual companies that are trying to be very smart about how they do business in Washington and how that relates back to their own company earnings. And if they do it right and they understand the system and they work within the system and try to have Washington at their back or the gale force wind of Washington helping out their company earnings, it's been very, very good for stock prices. So that relationship we've been tracking, and we actually have a portfolio that is designed to take advantage of that. We call it the Policy Opportunities Portfolio that we manage at my firm. Number four, five big pre-retirement mistakes to avoid. These are all trending on the website. Financial stories. You know what, Ryan, what really trends is happiness stories.
It does. I get it. Money's boring. It's personal.
It's not as exciting as ducklings and
vacations. Tahiti.
The website's broken down into the acronym is MASH: Money, Adventure, Success, Happiness, or Health, Happiness. Money, Adventure, Success, Health, Happiness. That's our acronym. If you go into the news tab, those are the sections, call them the verticals, that we write about on the website. Ryan Neely's already come up with a couple awesome stories. One about golf.
The nine best golf experiences in Georgia.
If there's one thing that Ryan loves slightly more than investing, it's golf.
It's on par. That's a golf reference.
I think it is.
Uh-huh.
And it is his semi-passion. No, let's call it his full-on passion.
It's a full-on thing.
If you would rank money versus golf, which one wins?
You have to have one to do the other, so
gosh,
it's neck so and neck. So but true. I like writing about both. I get it.
It works.
You can't play all nine courses in Georgia without having saved a little bit of money first.
And maybe some friends in high places.
And maybe some friends. Yeah, exactly. That always helps.
So, and then you have an article about – you did the article on the billionaires' mistakes, right?
Yeah, how billionaires can have bad financial plans or almost no plan at all.
Tell me about the billionaire issue. Tell me what was the genesis of this?
You know, Theranos, startup, was valued at $9 billion last year, I think. Elizabeth Holmes is the founder of that, her famous Stanford dropout. She owns half of that company. And so on paper, when the company was worth $9 billion, she's worth $4.5 billion.
Was she the founder?
Founder, yep.
And this Theranos, again, for those who are listening, this is a company that does advanced
blood testing.
That has been cheaper, better, supposedly. It's cheaper, but way better and quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's completely unraveled.
I don't know if we know that it's completely unraveled so far, but on paper, because some of her tests have not done what she said, the company is now worth something like $800 million.
From $9 billion.
That's about a 90% haircut. But the funny thing about her net worth and her plan is that the way she structured her investment deal to retain all of that equity is that a lot of the investors, and she's taken on like $725 million, something like that.
In investor capital. Not debt. This is private equity money. So those people now own portions of her company.
Yes, but they own what are called participating preferred shares, which means that in the event of a liquidation or the company is sold, before her half of her equity or her half of the company pays her, she has to pay all of those investors back plus interest.
Well, and $725 million
has come in.
It's valued at not even a bit.
Just
not even,
slightly over that, right, on
not
paper.
Even a billion. Mm-hmm. So technically her net worth is at zero.
Her stake in Theranos, which was $4.5 billion, is effectively zero, if those numbers are right.
And really a lot of this has to do with the credibility of what they have said that they're going to do, and then they really just haven't done it. So they have overpromised significantly on their product. And now their credibility is damaged, and it's slashed the value of the company by, again, 90%.
And her net worth by 100. And this is – the lesson is really – the takeaway is she was entirely undiversified. So even at $4.5 billion, she had no diversification. She got wealthy on one company. The value went through the roof. It happens to our listeners all the time. You get – you know, Lockheed Martin retirees that have an inordinate amount of Lockheed Martin stock, UPS, another great example, Coca-Cola, a great example of that, and it's non-diversified wealth. And the lesson here is that's great. It can make you really, really wealthy. But if you don't have a backup plan, your net worth can get slashed in something 90 to 100%.
You know? Or, and our listeners are probably saying, hey, wait a minute, why didn't she just take some chips off the table at least? Mm-hmm. And that, if you're going to be highly leveraged to one area of the world or one company or one sector, it's crazy to some extent not to at least take something off the table, to the point where if everything goes wrong, you've got some sort of, you've got enough life cushion or financial cushion. And it's amazing to think, and this happens a lot more than we think, you get these meteoric rises like a Theranos or, and I don't know her particular financial situation. She may have taken a little bit of money off the table. It's not really reported that she did, but you would think that in the position that she's in, she had at least cashed some of these chips in, as opposed to maybe taking a loan or a line of credit, which again has to go back to the bank or back to investors. You would have think that she would have done something from a planning perspective that would have given her at least some out if everything went wrong.
Yeah, and this is an interesting point too, because the thing about having a highly concentrated position or having all of your money in one place is that it can be pretty illiquid. So for a lot of our listeners, that can be your house, as an example. A lot of people still look at their home as the biggest piece of their net worth or a place that they're saving technically. But remember, you know, a house is pretty illiquid. You know, it's not like having cash or just owning a big diversified basket of publicly traded companies. You know, you have to put a house on the market, see what price you actually get, pay a 6% commission to actually move it. It's not fully liquid. It's not diversified either. So, again, I don't think your home will get cut by 90% anytime soon, but it's another perspective.
But it's the same principle.
Yeah, same principle.
Well, speaking of homes and what impacts homes, of course, has to very much do with interest rates. So as interest rates have gone down, it's gotten cheaper and cheaper, and this brings us to the topic of Janet Yellen on interest rates. And here we are. By the way, this is the June 12th edition of Money Matters Freeform. So probably should have started with that and dated today's given a date for today's show, but again, or podcast, it's June 12th, and we're talking about what's happening really impacting markets this week. Here, number one, we're talking about Janet Yellen on interest rates. So this week, there was more talk out of Yellen, who's, of course, our Fed chair, and she seems to, she's backed off a little bit on what looked to be a summer interest rate hike. Now it could end up being this fall. By the way, those Federal Reserve meetings, they get popped around in the media. Here's when they really are. The Fed has 8 of these regularly scheduled meetings every single year. So if you look at 2016, we had one. Basically, there's a winter-spring schedule, a summer, and then a fall schedule. So it's January, March, April, 3 meetings, January, March, April. Then there's 2 in the summer, June and July. That's the one coming up in mid-June, and then there's one in late July. Then there's a September, November, December meeting. Those are the 8. And that's where the Fed convenes on a Tuesday, and then on Wednesday afternoon, they tell the press, they tell the markets, hey, are we going to raise rates or not? And what they've been doing for years now is keeping rates at 0. They have recently upped rates so that they're close to about 25 basis points. So instead of rates being at 0, this is the federal funds rate, it's at 25 basis points, 0.25%. Yellen said, and that's this week, that the Fed won't be raising rates until new uncertainties about the economic outlook are resolved. Much of that has to do with that really bad jobs report we got for May. So we only added 38,000 jobs for the month of May. That's obviously an issue. The market hangs on her every syllable. So she takes away, and this is, they parse literally every word. In the most recent statement, she took away the words, in quotes, coming months. So now it's no longer coming months, and markets say, okay, that means not this summer, but all the way till fall until they start raising rates. Now, it's not to say that she thinks that the wheels are coming off the economy, and the Fed still thinks that rates or short-term rates will gradually rise as the economy improves. But markets have said basically this week, even though she said, hey, rates will eventually rise, markets said, sure they will. And no time soon. That's what we're thinking. It's interesting to me though, Ryan, that the Fed says they've said this for years, they're data dependent, and that should mean that it's the big picture of all the data. It's jobs, it's consumer spending, it's consumer confidence, it's housing, it's inflation, it's manufacturing, it's employment and earnings, it's all these things that deal with the economy. Of course, gross domestic product as a big part of this. But it seems to me that they're a little bit they're almost data point dependent. So data dependent, but then one number comes out and all of a sudden it it changes their trajectory really quickly. It seems almost a little short-sighted to me.
Well, I think what you're seeing and why it's so hard to explain the Fed to people sometimes or in a relatable way is just the biggest difference between those academic models. It's a very academic committee, right? They're all academic economists. And those econometric models that they use probably are in some pretty uncharted territory. I mean, we haven't had rates this low for this long ever, and I'd imagine that is really kind of doing something funny to those models and making them maybe not read the way they normally do.
Speaking of, this is interesting you mentioned this. There's an article in Barron's this week, page 21, Accounting for the New Economy. So this is a professor. His name is, I can't pronounce this, Barach Lev and Feng Gu. Those are the two economists or professors. They argue that generally accepted GAAP, which is accounting, GAAP stands for generally accepted accounting principles. They've lost their relevance in the shift away from an industrial economy. Three things that need to change. So, Ryan Ely, you're ahead of the game on these professors. Actually, they probably did it a little while ago. But you're right.
We are.
Here are the three benchmarks that the Fed said, hey, these are the things that will help us raise rates or not. Number one, economic acceleration in the second quarter versus a relatively weak first quarter. Number two, continued improvement in the labor market. And number three, inflation. They want inflation to pick up into the 2% range, which again gets us back to the worry that we're not seeing enough inflation. If we don't see inflation, does that mean we go to deflation? If we go to deflation, that's part of the reason people are still buying bonds that yield zero or even less. The U.S. 10-year treasury, so you loan the government money, and you get 1.64% for the next 10 years. That's where rates are right now.
That's 1.64%. Your risk-free rate.
That's technically risk-free. Mm-hmm. You buy a treasury, you buy an IOU for the United States government, and you're going to get a little over 1.5% to do it, which again leads me to this incredible story about crazy, crazy low bond yields. German government bonds, 10-year, fell to 0.02% this week. 10-year bond, 0.02, not even a tenth of a percent. Swiss government debt, 10-year bond, negative 45 basis points, negative 0.45. UK government debt, a whopping 1.23%. Well, it's similar story here in the United States, 1.64%. Japan is net negative, almost 0.2%. Australia, this is really in uncharted territory, to your point, Ryan. Unilever. So these are companies now issuing debt at zero. Unilever bonds due 2020. They have a 0% coupon yield of 0.08%. As of May, $10.4 trillion, that's with a T, trillion, in sovereign debt is in negative yield territory. Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Remarkable.
Now, we don't want to get Chicken Little about this. I don't think the world's coming to an end here, but there's obviously a run to safety, or is it just a run, Ryan, in your opinion, to a point of, hey, we're going to have deflation, so getting a little bit back when prices are getting cheaper boosts my overall real return. Is that what's happening?
Well, I think that is what's happening. I mean, I think when you look at risk-free rates around the world, and the reason these rates are different in all these different places is that these economies and the demographics that make up those economies, the people inside of them, are so vastly different. So in Germany, is it off the wall to think that in the next 10 years, given their demographic base, they barely have any inflation? It's probably not the craziest thing. In the U.S., however, places like America, places like Brazil, with a very different demographic base, look at the rates. They're still significantly nominally positive. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. Is it off the wall to think there's going to be deflation in Germany for 10 years? Maybe not.
Well, Unilever certainly – the fact that a company can – an issue debt that's virtually at zero is pretty remarkable to me. Here are some of my Unilever. I love Unilever. So
is that a Moss staple portfolio?
It should stock? Be. It has not made the Moss staple portfolio. But let's give you some of these brands. I'm looking up as we speak. Again, this is Money Matters free form. So we didn't plan any of this. And we are going with where the conversation takes us, and I want to just go and
talk
about
and the Moss, just to let our listeners know, the Moss staple portfolio, I think we've explained this before, but it is basically, if you look at what the Moss family or the Ely family, my family, just spends on every month, month after month after month, products, you can look at those companies. You can own those stocks. So if that's Verizon for your phone bill or AT&T for your cable,
Or yeah. Comcast for your cable.
Yeah, Comcast for your cable or General Motors for your cars. You really just can take a look around what you spend money on, and you can probably build a pretty diversified equity stock portfolio from that. So
Unilever, by the way, is really the, I would call it the Procter & Gamble of Europe. It's listed as an Anglo-Dutch multinational consumer goods company headquartered in Rotterdam, Netherlands, and then London.
Beautiful.
So it's the world's third largest consumer goods company measured by revenue. That was back in 2012. Number one, Procter & Gamble. Number two, Nestle. They are the world's largest producer of food spreads, such as margarine. And there's got to be some peanut butter in there somewhere. So if you go to Unilever Brands, it's a remarkable company. Hellmann's, bring out the best. Dove. For sensitive skin, Axe, greatest commercials for deodorant ever, Ben and Jerry's, owned by Unilever, Breyers, and the list goes on, Country Crock and Promise.
And Q-tips. Brummel and Brown, margarine.
Pretty amazing company. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some peanut butter in there somewhere, but I don't know.
Jif.
Jif, that's why I love.
That's the wrong Jif. That's the wrong Jif. I still haven't found your peanut butter, but okay. Lipton iced tea.
Well, let's continue on here, even though I know that I was excited about Unilever for just a second. But let's get back to rates here, is that we've got these really low bond yields. The question really is that why wouldn't a bank just it costs them money now. If you're a bank and you're holding cash, if you are depositing money, let's say if you're a European bank, the deposit rates now are so low that it's costing banks money to store cash, right? Mm-hmm. So the question is, why isn't there just some sort of, let's just literally under the mattress or in a vault, right? Well, when it comes down to physically storing this much money, it's amazing to think how much money physically takes up. So if you take $100 bills, and this was a tweet this week from the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago. If you take a pile of $100 bills and you stack them up an entire mile, a mile high stack of $100 bills, it only equals $1.4 billion. And banks have to store hundreds of billions and in some cases trillions of dollars. So you can't really just physically store. It has to be electronic. And that's part of the reason that we have these negative yields. They can't just store it for free. There's a cost. So the implications, of course, are lower rates. The European Central Bank, by the way, another materialization this week is the European Central Bank is buying bond yields. Another reason why I brought up Unilever. There's a couple other big companies. Allianz, I believe one, is another company in Europe that has issued bonds at a 0% coupon rate. I would say this for investors, though, Ryan. I think the important note here is that we've been talking about low bond yields for a very long time, knowing that the risk to bondholders is that you buy a long-term bond with a low yield and all of a sudden rates go way up. It hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened, and it hasn't happened. So you've been given chance after chance after chance after chance to get out of your long-term bonds. And if you still haven't done it, this is the time to do it. And now we want to hold bonds, of course, for the safety and security of your principal. So now you're not giving up a lot anyway. So why go far out on the yield curve anyway, when you might as well just have short-term bonds for the most part, intermediate to short-term bonds. You're getting your 0.5% to 1.5% or 2%, let's say, from really high-quality companies. Of course, yields go higher than that if you go into high yield. But why not just keep your bond portfolio short term at this point, And I think that's the message that we've talked to our clients about, we've talked to radio listeners about for a long time. So do you have any other commentary on that?
I think the
– Are you like my one of my kids just obsessed with your iPhone as I continue to talk?
That's where I have to get the data.
Oh, you're doing data.
I am. I got 30-year mortgages here, by the way.
What are they, people. 3.25?
3.6.
3.6.
For May of 2016, which is as low as they've been since the middle – or I'm sorry, the beginning of 2013. So it's, again, one of the byproducts for listeners of these low rates, obviously, is if you have a mortgage, it's up in the fours. It's probably time to take a look at that because this is
incredibly
low mortgage.
Now, I go back to – here's another transition back to the question about iPads and screen time as a dad. This is something that I've already written, and I'm going to start publishing this actually on Clark Howard's website and of course, my website, wesmoss.com. But I'm doing an article series, Ryan, called iPad Rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know my kids as well as anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they're pretty active kids. I mean, they're always doing something.
I give you credit there.
All over the place, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they still have this iPad problem, meaning that when given the chance, you give them, and they use these mini iPads, so they're the little iPads. They love the iPad so much, they'll just go off, and if I didn't take it away from them, they'd be on the iPad for 8 hours straight. There's something addictive about the Apple product iPads and iPhones. My younger kids, age 9, age 6, age 4, Samuel's 0, he's only 4 months old now, he still doesn't use an iPad, thank goodness. But left to their own devices, no pun intended, they'd stay on those things all the time. And as a family, we're always, I think as a parent, we're guilty of iPad creep because you let the kids use the iPad for just 10 minutes. Hey, I need a 10-minute break. They're running around. I got to change a diaper. And they become a babysitter. But it's only for 10 minutes, and then it's for 20 minutes, and then it's for 30 minutes.
And is it dangerous because you can take an iPad anywhere now? I mean, those things are connected everywhere. I mean, I thought when you first told me about this, I was like, well, we played Nintendo as kids for hours at a time. It's the only way you could beat Super Mario. Hours
a lot
of commitment.
Practice.
Yeah, a lot of practice.
But did you do that with your brother, Samuel? Or was it just Ryan by yourself, or did you have friends over on the Atari?
It was a little bit of everything. But there's a lot of – you grew up with a brother who's only 2.5 years younger. There's a lot of playing video games together.
So there's community.
Or fighting about them at least.
Your parents may not have liked the Atari, but there's at least some community around it.
Mm-hmm.
My kids, I'm fine with them playing on technology. I'm fine with the PS4. You watch a FIFA game, FIFA World Cup 2016 or whatever it is, it's as good as watching
it's
a real soccer game.
Amazing.
It's unbelievable. Just to watch two people play, it's so amazing. That's great. The video games are amazing. But there's community there, brother versus brother. You can have four people on FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
Watch a movie together as a group in the living room. You might have four or five people there. You're watching an Avengers movie. You laugh together. You might even cry together a little bit, right?
It's a sign of a great film.
You come together, or I'm thinking about when North Carolina lost this year, national championship. One of my kids cried. I don't blame him. I did a little bit too. But the reality here is that you do it together. It's a community. But your point about the portability of these devices, they just run off into a corner, mm-hmm. and they're totally segregated from the family. I'll find one of my kids literally sitting in a corner because there's an outlet near there and their iPad's down to 2%. So they have to plug in the iPad and they're sitting in the corner next to the outlet. So it stays on and they can continue to play Slither or some ridiculous game with a worm or a snake that gets fatter as it eats little blue dots.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really has gotten me fired up about these iPads is they fracture the family. And I, because of this iPad creep and our slight reliance, maybe it's because we're just bad parents, reliance on utilizing them as these mini timeouts or breaks for us. It's iPad creep. It creeps into the system and gets worse and worse and worse. And then you try to limit screen time. It's like, oh, only an hour. It seems so easy in principle. I'll just limit your screen time to 30 minutes or an hour. And that's what a parent will tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if a parent's honest with you, or at least half parents, half of the parents out there, it's not as easy as that. And kids will drip on their mom. They might be really nice about it. Hey, mom, please, let me a little more iPad time. Or they might get a mini temper tantrum. I really need the iPad. I want to finish this game. Or I need this. It's just such a battle that I just took them away, period. I took them away. I took them to the office. They're no longer in the home.
You know what? They're starting gone here? You know what we're starting? It could be a movement. I think this is the hashtag iPad rehab. If you're on Wes Moss Money Matters on Facebook and you got a story like Wes's here, because he's obviously very impassioned. You can't see him through the microphone, but he's got a little red glow about him. He's very excited about this.
Am I a leprechaun?
Yeah. It's a good glow. But I think if you have a story, go to the Wes Moss Money Matters Facebook page. If you have an iPad rehab story and just post it or like a video. We had a video this week from one of the girls that we work with, of
Amanda,
her daughter.
I can't wait to share. Well, we will share it. It's a pretty amazing video of her daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Davis put the iPad away.
Who's sweet as pie, by the
Couldn't
way.
Couldn't be sweeter.
Couldn't be a sweeter girl.
But wait till you take her iPad away.
Oh, boy. Wow. It was remarkable. So share those stories with us. Hashtag iPad rehab.
Hashtag iPad rehab. That's a brilliant idea.
Or Twitter at WesMoss365.
Hashtag iPad rehab.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean fixing the iPad. You Google that right now, you Google iPad rehab, it's, I have a cracked screen. Come on in and get it fixed. When I say iPad rehab, I mean getting kids off of the what has become a drug to me. It's I call them crack pads for a reason. And I'm an Apple shareholder, and I love Apple as a company. Apple to do well.
I might have everything but the iWatch.
It's actually laptop, the Apple Watch.
Or Apple. See? I don't even know. You have it. It's highfalutin. But I get it. This could be a crisis in America.
And you know what it could be? This could be a movement to help end the crisis in America that's fracturing our families. Stay tuned for more information and updates about iPad rehab. And check back on WesMoss.com and our Facebook page, Wes Moss Money Matters, for updates and stories about the progress of the Moss Boys and other families that contribute to the iPad rehab story. I'm telling you, it was a very tough couple days. I am a very unpopular dad right now. Dad, you are the worst dad. You are the worst dad ever. You're taking me back to the Abraham Lincoln days is what you're doing.
At least they know that reference. That's a good sign.
The Abraham Lincoln days.
You should get him out back and just chop trees for 3 days.
Okay.
Just get calloused
hands. Since we're there,
yeah.
Let's go chop some wood. So number two on my list this week, oil. Oil hits $50 a barrel again this week. Finished the end of the week, finished at about 49. Remember, we use still, and I would say that Ryan is an expert on oil and energy as well, but we use 20 million barrels per day in the United States, almost 20 million barrels of oil per day. And to take you through a little bit of a sequence and why this is important, number one, U.S. oil production started to skyrocket in 08 and really into 2009 because of the Energy Policy Act of 2005 that effectively allowed fracking. 2005, George Bush, fracking, and it really ramped up by 08, 09, and all of a sudden we had our own production deluge here in the United States. Then prices fell because a big part of it had to do with this excess supply. And then because of all the other oil-producing nations still wanted to keep the revenue as high as possible because prices were dropping, they had to sell even more oil. So the price went down even further. So we went from 110 down to, I want to say we bottomed at like $26 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd call that the trough. Or is that a
somewhere
nadir? Is that a nadir or a trough?
I'm going to call it a trough.
Let's call it a trough.
Yeah, trough.
So also what that's done, though, is gas has gone from $4 a gallon down to about $2.50 where we are today. But this has also contributed to GDP stalling. So part of the GDP stall, gross domestic product, it has to do with oil. Big oil companies like Exxon are big. we call it CapEx, capital expenditures, basically what companies spend. So they put money into new projects. It's a big boost for the economy. Big oil companies have not only stopped expanding their capital expenditures, but they've reduced them dramatically. ExxonMobil is an example, almost 20% reduction in what they're spending. That's a big number. That hurts GDP. The last 2 years, though, here's the impact of the market. You look from June 14 to June 2016, the S&P has been relatively capped. It keeps hitting the ceiling. It keeps hitting this 2130 ceiling, 2130. Can't seem to get over that. But over the last 2 years, it's up only about 8.5% over 2 years. Even with the recent rally that we've had, it was net negative not too long ago. XLE, which is the oil spider ETF, is down 31% still. Now that, and that's with the recovery we've seen the last couple of months. So oil in it has been a very big part of the economic and market story that we've been living with for a long time now. What's happening in Alaska? We were talking about this earlier.
Further your point about companies cutting CapEx, Royal Dutch Shell has, for the time being, this happened late last year, totally abandoned their Arctic drilling in Alaska. Totally abandoned. I believe they invested something in the line of $7 billion on projects up there between 2005 and 2015. So $7 billion with a B. And they are just abandoning it.
They're just out?
Leaving it on the table.
That's pretty amazing.
For now.
Sign of the times.
Well, it is. And it's oil's kind of one of those self – it's a self-correcting thing. Low prices are a pretty good cure for low prices. High prices are a really good cure for high prices. So it's a pretty efficient market, but it's been an absolute bloodbath. You talked about S&P being stuck at this ceiling for more than a year now. If you look at earnings in 2015 and you just cut out the energy sector for S&P 500 earnings, they were a negative contributor. So the energy sector in 2015 lost money.
As a whole. So just take them away and the earnings as a number nominally would be even higher.
Slightly higher. That's never happened. Never happened before.
Speaking of this, let's talk about this market and where it is. And this is a pretty fascinating statistic that I picked up from Barron's this week. So May of 2015, that's last year, May of 2015, a little over a year ago, the S&P 500 hit 2,130. That's the all-time high. Today, we sit about 34 points below that. And this week, we were within 11 points. So we were really close to getting back to that high. According to Barron's, it's been more than, 380 days since we hit a record high on the S&P 500. But when the market does hit that all-time high and break through it, you get back to it and go just slightly above, it's almost always been worth the wait. So hitting a new high, and you got to break through this 2130 mark, following, Ryan, a pause of 300 days or more. First of all, it's rare. It's only happened 23 times since 1928. It's only been 23 times that we've had such a long period of time before we get back to an all-time high and bust through it, if you will. Yet, when it does, it's been very, very good news for markets. When we've seen this kind of, we're going to call it a protracted interlude, 1 year later, the market's higher 91% of the time. And it's averaged 15.6% if we've done that. So if we waited 300 days since we hit a high, then we break through it, you typically see a pretty strong market. But remains to be seen if we do that. We're still 11 points away, and we keep hitting that. It almost feels like a ceiling at 2130. We haven't been able to break through. So we'll see if we can break through this elusive ceiling that's only about 1.5% away. And part of that has to do with obviously earnings. It just can't quite get above. The S&P's trading at about 18 times earnings trailing 12 months. So it's hard to have a valuation go a whole lot beyond that. And that's part of the issue.
Yeah, unless rates stay this low for much, much longer, there's the hypothesis or the theory, I guess, that the stock market at 17 or 18 times earnings is actually really a pretty good deal if the 10-year treasury, biggest alternative,
is this low.
Is, 1.64%.
So on a relative basis, stocks still
look pretty good. I mean, you get a 2% dividend. You get more in dividends from the S&P today than you do owning a 10-year treasury. So is it 17? Is it 18? Maybe it's more like 2022. That could make sense.
Now, there's also been some retail woes. This is amazing. If you look at the retail space, look at Macy's. By the way, the stock has been crushed partially because of earnings. Amazon continues to just change the game when it comes to retailing, and it's had major negative impact on big stalwarts of the industry. So Macy's, Gap's bonds this week were downgraded to junk status. It's an all-American brand. Unbelievable. So you've got Gap, which is Gap, and Banana Republic. I mean, these are solid brands. They're now junk bond status. Gap and Macy's stock, and I went back over the last year. Okay, go back June 15 to June 16, 2016. If you do a chart, the S&P 500 is virtually flat, 0.09% flat. Gap and Macy's are down over 50%, 50%, half value, wiped out. Amazon is up 67%. So there's this manifestation that, I mean, Amazon is not in any, it's not new. It's been around forever. It's seemingly forever. But in the last few years, it's really started to eat these retailers for lunch. And it's a very real impact in the equity markets. Have you switched over to the Amazon? Because you're one of these.
No.
You're still a millennial and you're kind of a tech-savvy guy, but you refuse some modern-day technologies.
There are some lines I just won't cross.
You're like a modern-day Amish man.
Yeah, exactly. I like to go 30 minutes away from my house to buy blankets and butter from the Amish. I prefer that social interaction to having the blankets and butter delivered to my doorstep in a brown box. My wife, huge Amazon user, probably makes up for both of us. She carries the weight.
Have you guys ever used Amazon Prime Now, where it's 2-hour delivery?
We have not yet. We do the scheduled dog food delivery. I think that's the most convenient one. But I'd rather go to a store. I'd rather go to Macy's and look at all the different Cole Haan shoes. On a shelf, I still prefer that shopping experience.
You're a modern day Amish man.
Yeah, I prefer Renaissance man, but that's you could go
we'll stick
with
Amish.
Man.
You haven't been upgraded to Renaissance status.
There's that. You know what the other one? You know what the other big technology thing is? Obviously money matters. I don't do Mint.com. I don't do the all online financial thing.
You don't.
No.
You're not comfortable
I do,
with it.
Literally, my bills get it's bill pay. To be fair, it's a modern technology.
Modern.
But those are checks. They actually just send a check when I click bill pay.
Again, you're the modern day version of a millennial who loves technology, but is almost also Amish at the same time. It's a fascinating blend, Ryan Ealy.
Not too far off the reservation. Yeah.
This week, the markets didn't really do a lot. So the Dow was up about 1/3%, S&P down 0.15, NASDAQ down 1. For the year, here we are in June, and the weather's heating up. I don't know about where if you're in San Diego or one of these wonderful California places. It's still probably the perfect weather. San Francisco. I'm so jealous. It's
one of my favorite places.
It's in the mid 90s to high 90s. I've got one of these swim meets. It's like 7-hour swim meets tomorrow. Temperature here in Atlanta is supposed to be in the high 90s. I saw on my weather app, 98 degrees. People get dehydration. They fall over and get sick when it's this hot. So we have a market year-to-date up 2.5% for the Dow and the S&P, just about that. NASDAQ's down about 2.25%. This week, though, because we had this pause in interest rate-sensitive areas like utilities and telecom actually went up, as there seems to be this, again, extended pause in rates not going up. Telecom up 2.5%, utilities up 1.5%, financial companies, big banks down 1.5% because low rates are not necessarily that profitable or great for banks. So part of the sell-off, though, has to do with Brexit, and probably my least favorite political economic term because it reminds me of a tabloid. Reminds me of Angelina and Brad Pitt. What are they? Brangelina. Here, Britain and exit is now talked about as Brexit. There's a referendum on June 23rd. To decide if Britain stays or it goes. And that's whether it stays or goes. from the EU, the European Union. Prime Minister David Cameron, he made some campaign promises to potentially get them more independent because Britain hasn't had a voice in the EU like the population seems to want. And that's another part of why we see European bond yields down at these crazy, crazy lows. We talked about Germany is basically a zero yield on 10-year Swiss government debt, 10-year down almost a half or negative almost a half a percent on their 10-year paper. So Brexit equals uncertainty, and uncertainty equals more bond buying. That means prices go up and yields come down. We know that, again, bonds in Germany and around the world are hitting all – bond yields are hitting all-time lows. The prices are hitting all-time highs. So if you own bonds, you've been making money and making money and making money in the environment that we continue to see ourselves in. So all of this to say, keep your bonds short term and make sure that you're getting income from areas that are not just bond-oriented. Of course – we know that with markets at an all-time high, it's a difficult time to be buying in hand over fist when markets are 1% or 2% away from an all-time high. It's also difficult to buy in to bond markets when bond prices are at all-time highs because yields are at all-time lows. So you've got to just be judicious and careful and balanced in this environment that we're in. My answer to the world that we live in today has very much to do with this merging of a conservative strategy with a relatively aggressive strategy. Put those together, they help offset each other so that you don't have too much risk and too much volatility in one area, i.e. stocks. I love dividend paying stocks, but if you're a 60-year-old retiree, it's unnerving and difficult to just have everything tied back to the stock market. And that's why balance is still key. Income investing is still my answer to the generation of cash flow. And whether if you're early, if you're not retired yet, you reinvest the cash flow. It's part of your total return. If you're in retirement, you use those dividends and interest and distributions. They come back as an overall portfolio yield. That comes back to you as cash flow. It's your new paycheck once you stop working. So income investing is a philosophy. It's not the only way to do it, but it's still a big part of what I believe works for before you get to retirement, and particularly once you're there and you start needing an additional stream of income. And that's our philosophy at our firm, Capital Investment Advisors. We are a specialty income portfolio manager. It's a big part of what we do. So I'm a big believer in doing so. So there's plenty coming up this week. We've got the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference in San Francisco. Maybe they'll talk about hashtag iPad rehab. We see retail sales data coming out for May. The Fed has their two-day meeting, Tuesday, Wednesday. That's obviously a big deal. And Ryan Ely, what do you have? Are you going to write anything this week? Anything big on your mind? You're going to post one of your famous articles on westmoss.com underneath the happiness tab, adventure tab, or news tab?
I think this would probably be an adventure, possibly a news, the U.S. Open. Does it start this week? Or is it? It's coming up.
You're
it's
the
very
golf maven. You would know better than I.
I should know. It starts very, very soon. I imagine it's very – it's what?
It's imminent.
It's upon us. There's some very interesting ties always to golf and money and the way some of these guys – like a Jordan Spieth who has changed the game for Under Armour, how he affects that business. And so, yes, we'll have something this week probably related to the U.S. Open – and investing.
Right. So the speed, and you're referring to the day that Spieth missed a birdie and Under Armour stock went down all at the same time?
Yeah. Yeah. It's something like that. I don't know if the stock moves swing by swing for him, but obviously, you know, the Jordan Spieths of the world, the Steph Currys of the world for the basketball player for the Warriors have this huge outlandish effect on what that stock does.
Their particular brands.
Yeah.
So U.S. Open, June 16th through 19th at the Oakmont Country Club in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. Is that your hometown golf course? You're from Pennsylvania.
I am, just like you. But no, I am literally from Amish country, to your point earlier. Nowhere close to Oakmont. But it's this week.
Ironically,
the U.S. Open is this week.
Ryan and I met here in Georgia. He's a Georgia Tech grad. I'm a North Carolina Chapel Hill grad. We met here, yet we both grew up pretty close to Amish country. I was in I'm from Coatesville, Pennsylvania. My dad's a large animal vet, so his clients when I was young, his clientele were Amish dairy farmers. Lancaster was only 10 or 20 minutes, 15 minutes away, and we used to do milk fever calls and hang out with the Amish an awful lot. So I'm looking for U.S. I'm looking for tickets for the U.S. Open on pricing. I see a $18.95 club weekly ticket package. That is
that $18.95?
$1,875.
Oh boy!
But unfortunately, that's sold out.
Wow!
Thank goodness.
Wow!
All right. With that, that's fun. That's our first Money Matters Freeform. That's awesome.
That was good.
That's really fun.
I was going to make sure to check out the Wes Moss Money Matters Facebook page, WESMOSS Money Matters on Facebook, and follow that page. Tons of interesting stuff. Everything that goes on WesMoss.com ends up on the Facebook page as well. We'll try to keep you up to date. The most interesting articles about money and happiness.
Money, adventure, success, health, happiness. Ryan, this has been a pleasure. This has been a lot of fun. We're going to do this again. This is cool. And send us an email. You can always just send me an email. My email direct is Wes Moss, WESMOSS, at yourwealth.com. I don't usually say that on the air, but this is podcast only. So we'll see if people email and say, hey, if you like the podcast or not. And if you listen all the way to the end. I mean, this is a long podcast. They're not supposed to be this long.
You can do it 1.5 times, though. You see that? You can, like, play podcasts 1.5 times speed.
Okay, 1.5x. I like that. Hopefully people are listening to this, like, 1.5 times, maybe even 2. It's like Ryan Ely and Wes Moss, Alvin and the Chipmunks. If I look at my clock here, well, we're 51 minutes. That's within the hour. I like it. Enjoy the rest of this day or tomorrow, whatever it might be for you. Thanks for tuning in to Money Matters Freeform, and I would say the radio station, but I'm just going to say, I guess you're listening to this through either iTunes or WesMoss.com.